Damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is going to be the mini show for the month of March 2023. So we'll talk about whatever we feel like. We got some games.
That's good, because I completely forgot what we were actually recording.
We got some tier rankings. How you guys been? It's been a couple weeks since we've been in the same room recording. You guys doing all right?
It has. It's been okay.
That's good.
Doing good. Been busy.
Yeah. How's work? How's work going? Doing all right?
Yeah.
It's a
job.
Good talk.
I went and saw Creed 3.
Oh, nice. What'd you think?
Cool. It was okay.
Yeah?
I mean,
I don't think I ever saw Creed 2.
Creed 2, he fights the...
The ghost of Apollo Creed?
Yeah. That would have been a better movie.
No, come on.
Be like, I love you, Dad. It punches him in the face. You know.
Didn't he, like, wasn't that the thing about Creed 1? He never really knew his dad?
Yeah, I guess. I can't remember. It's been so long since I see the first one. Now, Creed 2, he fights... Either it's like the son or the student of the Russian guy that Rocky fights.
Oh, Drago or something?
Yeah. It's like his son or something. Some big Russian guy.
It was Draco Malfoy.
Yes.
The Russian boxer in Rocky 4.
Yes.
Where are we going with this?
I don't know.
I thought you were breaking down the Rocky franchise for
Creed 3, he fights some like childhood friend that goes to jail... And they don't keep in touch because they're kids, and one dude went to jail.
And it's hard to keep in touch with people in prison.
Apparently.
It factually is.
Oh, all right.
They don't let you out much. That's kind of the core concept of prison.
But it was okay. It had some pretty obvious story beats. There was no big twists. I was like, oh my god, like everything happened, you saw
they're
it coming.
They're going to have a boxing match at the end?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
You didn't see like the struggle that much with the boxing match like the other two movies. I was like, that didn't really look that hard. Like,
it's like
all right.
I'm pretty good at boxing now.
You got him. Yeah. What is it with rich people on pillars in their house? Like, he had columns in his house. I just don't understand that. Like,
I think that's kind of like what a low-class person thinks a high-class person does.
Hmm.
He had, like, you know what I'm saying?
Full-blown columns in his house. Like a Colosseum or shit. And it was weird. I never understood that.
Yeah, I think there's also kind of like a appreciation for history of like white history. The fact that the Greeks were so far ahead of themselves that there is this kind of, you know, frankly, an ethno-whiteness to it that some people tend to like.
Yeah, is there like a Greek and Roman culture?
Sure. Yeah.
That was a good movie. I liked it.
Cool.
Yeah.
Ryan, you got anything to vamp with, or you just jump right in here?
Oh my god. I watched a movie. I did watch a relatively new movie. It was called Infinity Pool. It was made by the son of Cronenberg. It is one of the... I will not recommend it, even though I watched it. And I wouldn't say I enjoyed it. I just sort of experienced it. It's a very gruesome film. And it's very nasty. A lot of it's very nasty. And very uncomfortable to watch. Cronenberg's, you know, David Cronenberg, the father, made a lot of movies like that. His son, but like David Cronenberg is gross with what he does to bodies. And I feel like this movie was just gross with what it does to people psychologically in the story. It's kind of one of those movies that sticks with you. If you want something that is horror and very gross, and just very, you just kind of need a shower after it, I totally recommend it. Infinity Pool. Go check it out. Otherwise, it's probably like, maybe don't watch that.
I don't plan to. All
right.
Yeah.
Based on your recommendation to not.
Mm-hmm.
So I got some video games to discuss.
No movies? We both brought a movie, and
yeah,
you got nothing.
We don't give a shit.
That was just warming up. We were just warming up right there.
Yeah.
Kind of getting back.
You don't want to warm up? Ryan and I are all warmed up now. You're not.
I haven't really watched a movie recently.
That's been weird.
I suppose.
You watch a lot of movies.
I guess.
You're not watching like a TV show or nothing?
The Last of Us just had their series finale, season finale.
Okay, don't care. You can move on to whatever you
want. Yeah, I mean, it's so fresh that, like, anyone who's found this podcast on the internet has obviously heard of The Last of Us, and I don't know if they've seen it or not. So,
I
mean, it's a fun show in the way that, like, end of the world shows can be fun, kind of seeing like what has become of civilization, society, as things have gone to total shit.
I think I want to play the game before I watch the show.
I think you've mentioned this before.
Yeah. I'm mentioning it again. Here it is.
You do you. You know.
I don't know what's better, but you know.
That's how you want to live.
It's a better way to do it.
I mean, it's 9 episodes, and they're all about an hour long. I wonder if just like the core campaign of The Last of Us is 9 hours. I'm not sure what style of game it is. So I imagine some sort of shooty shooter, but a third-person shooter, first-person shooter.
Yeah, it's a third-person shooter, and it's like, I don't know.
It's Space Marines. And
I played it at a friend's house one time. It's quite a bit like Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
To pin it to anything, like, what does this game feel like? It felt a lot like Resident Evil
4. I was thinking like Resident Evil.
That Resident Evil 4 remake looks real good.
I mean,
the game is legit.
I mean, you just gotta have to play it. Yep. It's just, I'm gonna...
I didn't realize until like last week that it was also coming to PS4. Like, I don't need to wait till the new hardware. I can just play it on the system I have. This is great.
That is interesting. Actually, this isn't the retro show, but we'll be talking about something associated with Resident Evil in that one coming up. But just sort of like after watching the movie, like Netflix just sort of stumbled into the fact that it had a Resident Evil TV series.
I know, right?
And I started watching it, and it was so bad. It's just so bad.
It's not good.
It has nothing to do with anything.
No, it is Resident Evil in name only.
Right.
And the fact, like, there's zombies.
I got, like, 2.5 episodes in, and I was just like, I think that's enough of that.
I pushed all the way through it, because I really wanted to be good, because I love Resident Evil. And I was like, okay, maybe they'll turn it around. They did not. turn it around.
No, I gathered that they wouldn't.
But I got a couple games to talk about. You guys got any games?
I have like 2.5 games to talk about.
Nice. I got a game.
Okay. I'll kick things off with Octopath Traveler, because I'm playing through that one. That was a new release. We touched on that one a little bit on the official show a couple weeks back, because I've been playing through the demo. Progress does carry over from the demo, so I was able just to pick up where I left off. I, of course, started with the Thief character. So I'm about 40 hours in, a little more than 40 hours in at this point. Like I said, I picked the Thief character first. Something that is different this time around. And remember in Octopath 1, Wes, you played that one. Yep. All of the characters have like their little field skills.
Yeah.
In order to open treasure chests out in the world, you had to have the thief with you. It seems like that sort of thing is gone. So your party construction isn't quite as crucial to the exploration. You just kind of mix and match depending on who you want to use at that point, rather than having to be like, okay, I need to have a person who performs this function, person who performs this function. If you remember when you're in towns, there are things that your characters can do. The thief can steal from people, whereas the merchant will buy items off of people. In Octopath 1, I think it was that the cleric would inquire of people to learn information, whereas the scholar would scrutinize. And if you were to do something like steal or scrutinize, it wouldn't cost you any money, but there was a probability that you would fail at doing so and hurt your reputation in the town. Your reputation falls so low, no one will interact with you anymore. So you have to like then go pay money to restore your reputation in that town. In Octopath 2, there are characters who do a lot more things. So in the daytime, the thief will steal, and at nighttime, the thief will ambush, which is basically just if there's an NPC standing in the way blocking a building, you switch it to nighttime, which you can do with the push of a button, ambush them, that'll knock them out, knock them prone, and then you can just go in there. And there'll be other characters who can do the same thing at different times of day. So if you want to build a balanced party, so okay, well, during the daytime I have characters performing these functions, and at nighttime they perform these other functions, so I'm able to do a lot of the things that I can do in this town without having to switch things out a whole lot. And then the other half of creating that balanced party is how you're actually going to perform in a fight. So just like in Octopath 1, if you remember in that game, every enemy that you will encounter has a shield that you have to break down in order to do any substantial damage, unless you're overleveled. And in order to break down that shield, you have to hit them with a weakness. And weaknesses will range from weapon types, sword, dagger, spear, axe, bow, or staff, or magical affinities, wind, electric, ice, fire, light, dark. And your different character classes will be able to have access to different skills that will perform actions that will have that sort of affinity associated with them, whether it's the weapon or the elemental affinity to break down the shields. And then basically what you're doing in any major fight is figuring out what's the most effective way to break down the shield while buffing up, debuffing them, so you can do a few big hits that's going to take down their entire HP. And you can, of course, take on secondary jobs when you get to a certain point in the game. So right now I have my thief character matched up with a hunter, which gives access to a couple of new weapon types that she can equip. Also, it helps enhance her speed. And her big attack is based on her speed and how fast she is compared to the enemy character. So that's it's a good matching to do. The other one that's a good match for the thief is the dancer, because the dancer can also buff and debuff, but you don't get as much access to different weapons when you're a dancer class, because dancers only use daggers, you know, just like in real life.
Yep.
But yeah, I'm really liking the battle system. Like you were saying, like a month ago, Wes, it's largely unchanged. If it wasn't broke, don't fix it, and it wasn't broken. And you do get like the there's the one new thing, like the meter that builds up during the fight that lets you like utilize a special skill, and the special skill can be like, okay, in this turn you can have two actions, or it will do things like the cleric. The cleric. When you use the special skill, any weapon that you use will break down the enemy defenses. So if you want to just hit them with a staff four times and break down the defenses, no matter what they're weak to, it's a useful one to burn. The warrior will have a couple of extra attacks that it can do, like some different types of attacks. So, you know, none of these skills are really game-breaking or like making you overpowered, but they give you like a slight little edge to get you like kind of, if you're falling behind in a fight, kind of help turn things around and build some momentum back. Right now I'm not really paying too much attention to the party construction. Nothing's really been too difficult that I've had to retry fights or try to reconstruct a party based on the area that I'm in or the boss that I'm going up against. I'm just kind of constructing the party based on, okay, this is kind of the general area of the map I'm in. These are the next recommended areas or story sequences that I can go through, and these are the recommended levels. So let's take the character that I need for the next story segment, take some characters who aren't quite as leveled up as the rest of them, so I can keep a balance to it and keep the momentum going forward. I can't really give a definitive judgment if this game is like grindy, because I have spent time grinding just for fun. If I'm like in an area, I'm like, okay, well, let's see what enemies can appear in this area. And I'll go through and figure out all their weaknesses and figure out, okay, well, here's like the moves that I want to do in this order in order to get through these fights the most effectively. So I have spent a fair amount of time like grinding, but it wasn't to the extent where I was like, well, I need to do this because I need levels. I was doing it because I wanted to figure out how the game was working. And I've also run into a couple of different rare enemies. These are enemies that don't have much HP, but they're also very evasive, and they pay out tons of experience, which has been pretty cool. I've gained quite a few levels just because I've been able to take some of them out, and they'll pay off like tens of thousands or thousands of experience. So I gain three or four levels just from fighting one or two of them.
So it's you're like running into an Audino or a Chansey or something.
Yeah, just like running into one of those Pokemon that just pays out a lot of EXP. It's pretty great. But yeah, I'm having a good time with it. There is a demo if anyone hasn't tried it, but I recommend it. It's a good RPG. All right, Reagan, tag in.
All right. I guess I'll do the half game first, because I think you already probably talked about it months ago, but River City Girls 2?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. What was your take on it?
Thumbs up.
You liked it?
Yeah.
Okay.
We played a little bit of it together when it came out.
Yeah, so I got a copy of it. I've been catching up on some games, and I got a copy of it. And yeah, I fucking love it. It is fantastic. It is a worthy sequel. Kind of, you know, they captured everything that was great about the first River City Girls. It's that kind of fun beat-em-up, like Twitch beat-em-up brawler where you get to kind of juggle them around. The characters aren't too complicated that you feel like you don't... You know, you don't have to look up, like, a sheet of moves and stuff. They don't expect you to do a lot of really intricate combos. You just sort of unlock new moves, and you do the new moves as you go along. A ton of really fun playable characters. So much voiced dialogue in it is really, really nice. All of the different voice actors and actresses they used are great. I mean, they got back the original composer and musician from the first game, too. She's fantastic. The songs that she has in it are great. It's like everything, every component of this game, I feel like I just want to gush about. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, just super well polished.
Yeah. Fighting animation's great. Plays really crisp. The all of the rooms that they've made, like as you're kind of traveling through it, look fantastic. One little drawback is that it does get a little annoying how much you have to refer to the minimap to kind of navigate around. Because it's not very intuitive. It's not, I mean, it is sort of a grid layout, but the entrances and exits on the maps are not cleanly laid out like a grid would be. You know, sometimes if you want to go down, you have to go up. Like,
yeah.
Sometimes if yeah, you
want to... Like, on the map, it'll like, here's the room, and here's the room you want to get to, but the path, like, hooks around.
Yeah, and it's like, you want to go east, but there's two doors that could potentially lead east, you know? A lot of scenarios like that happen with the way that the map looks, and, you know, again, there's no little, like, no mini-map or no way of navigating you through the rooms to where you're trying to go. You can't pin a destination and go to it that way. So you really, I find myself constantly, like, flashing up and down the map. But at any rate, that's just a minor inconvenience.
And it'd be tough to have a mini-map on the screen because there are, like, things where you're pixel hunting for, like the cats and the photo spots. Yep. So it's not an easy thing to design around. Like, having it just be like on a strict grid would be great. If you could like pin on the map the place you want to go, and it would just like give you like a little flashing light on the exit to go through to get there, that might be something that helps.
Well, and also
a second screen.
Yeah, like for when you need to do stuff though, like it does work well because they just basically make it not be blue; it's purple.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That indicates that there's something more to do there.
Mm-hmm. That's super handy.
And I'm at the point where I've accomplished everything. I've done it all. I haven't beaten all the way through New Game Plus, which I think is like the crowning achievement. But every other little mini mission, you know, taking the different snaps from where you are, like you said, looking
get all the tarot cards.
Getting all the tarot cards. Super duper fun. I actually really got caught up in the whole collecting bad guys element, which is probably what, like, I didn't plan on doing it when I first started out. So there were only a handful that I'd caught. And I didn't realize that as you're going through, like, each of them perform different functions. So it's worth it to just sort of try each and every one of them out because they all do very different things. And I had this combo of two that I really, really liked. One was, like, the LARPer, you know, the skateboard kids that...
Yeah.
One of them will just shoot this freezing arc and is absolutely fantastic. And then one of them was, like, the sort of cat robot women. One of them just shoots this really nice projectile. So you can kind of just...
See, that right there just tells you how good this game is. When you're the LARPer on the skateboard, he throws a freezing thing, and then the cat robot women. Like, just the fact that those two are in a game.
Yeah. No notes.
Were you guys ever fans of, like, Marvel vs. Capcom?
Yeah, a little bit.
I don't like fight games like that.
Oh, well, there's a mechanic in those where you would have assists, essentially, where that's more of a 2D fighter, but... You could call in an assist to perform a different function. So say Guile was your assist. He would either come in and maybe throw a sonic boom, just throw a haymaker, or do his flash kick for anti-air. And you would select how you wanted him to behave. And it seems like, you know, if there's six different kinds of LARPers, one, they all look a little different, like their color palettes are different. And they'll all perform differently. So one poisons, one shoots the freezing thing, one has like a forward dash. So depending upon what you're trying to do as a like to help you either just simply survive fights or just do chain fights. There's all different ones that are worth testing and trying out. I also love the actual detailed character designs on the bad guy screen. Like, because you have these kind of blocky, pixely things. It's kind of always been the fun of this is like, you know, when you see like a blocky, pixely game, but then you see the artwork and the artwork looks like fucking Contra 3 Alien Wars. And it's like, that's not what I look like in the game. I'm a big old mess of pixels in the game, but the artwork looks so fantastic. It sort of gives you like this sense of world. So it's the same with all these characters, right? Like, you actually get to look in and just flip through them, and they're all designed so differently and so interestingly. You know, really, really fun. The combat's really engaging. Just everything about it's great. If you like a beat-em-up, this, I would easily say this is better than the Ninja Turtles. Like, I like this so much more than the Ninja Turtles ones, and I really liked the Ninja Turtles ones, so.
Yeah, there's some really top-tier beat-em-up games available on Switch, like this, and Riverside Girls 1, and Ninja Turtles, and
I think
this guy's got Pilgrim's another pretty good one.
Right now, in my mind, it is, frankly, this at the top. Mm. Streets of Rage 4,
yep.
I think, is really, really strong, and then the Ninja Turtles game.
Yep.
Like, those are my three right now, and if you like beat-em-ups, you are in heaven, because those are all great games.
For sure. There's an arcade that has a Marvel vs. Capcom machine. It's up in Oviedo, so it's a bit of a hike. But me and Des have been there a couple of times. It's like a day pass. You pay, I think, like...
Oh, I've heard of this.
Monster Arcade,
I think. Yeah, I've heard of this.
And then they got a Marvel vs. Capcom machine. They got tons of pinball machines. They got a Luigi's Mansion arcade machine and Mario Kart. Those are the ones we usually hit the couple of times that we've been there.
Gauntlet?
No Gauntlet, sadly. One of these days. No, they don't have Gauntlet anymore, not since the incident.
Well, more towards Dr. Phillips and like the attractions, there's one called Player One
bar
that I go to. And the last couple times I've been there, their House of the Dead machine was not working, which was a bummer, because that game is a fucking amazing.
Travesty.
But yeah, they have Marvel vs. Capcom 2, which is like... fucking amazing. I love that game so much.
And they do have, at this one, up in Oviedo, the opposite direction of the attractions, they do have a House of the Dead game as well.
Yeah.
I forget which one it is.
So I got two more games. If you want to talk about them now, like we can, or...
Let's do one more and then tag over to Wes.
Okay. I played I don't even know if it's a... when did this game even fucking come out? I think it's relatively new to the Switch, but it's called What Remains of Edith Finch.
It's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it came out in 2017. It was available in 2019 on the Switch. I got this one as part of a sale. It was like $5.
I've almost grabbed this a few times.
You guys have heard of it?
Mm-hmm. I've heard of it,
Know a little bit about it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, again, I got it on a whim because I always heard it was a great game. You know, it's always gotten really good reviews. It won all kinds of awards when it came out. And you know what? It really does live up to its reputation. I would say it fits into that category of sort of like narrative games. And it's the kind of game where, you know, they're not really asking you to do anything. There's no twitch game mechanics. There's no real even puzzling in it. There's no fail states. Like, you can't lose the game. You can only just simply spend your time absorbing it. The premise is really cool. It's the kind of premise that I think would make a great film. The game itself plays sort of like a movie does, and it's a fascinating little movie. But the premise is that you are a woman who is going back to her family home to sort of just kind of collect information about the family now that their mother's dead. And essentially the premise is that all of the members of the family, this extended family that you have going back four generations, all of them are sort of tragically ill-fated and terrible things happen to them. And it's just going through this really amazing house that they had, just walking through and sort of getting information about it and about all the different people. And then you sort of uncover how they died and all of this stuff that your mom didn't want to tell you but knew that you would discover if you went back and just sort of went through the house and looked around and saw what was there. I think it's one of the best looking games. Oh my god, the game looks incredible. There's just so much detail in every little bit. It's the kind of game where if you just went through and clicked the buttons, you could probably beat it in like an hour and a half. If you're doing it right, you're probably just going to spend 5 hours looking at shelves. And, like, just looking at the kitchen and just seeing what's happening everywhere in this house. It is just so absolutely loaded with lived-in, gorgeous detail. And it's very much, like, you know, like, I'll play games on the couch every once in a while. And my girlfriend doesn't give a shit about games that I play, really. She's just like, she's like, it's fine if you want to do it, go ahead. Like, I never get her to care at all about
it. It's just Dr. Mario and that's it.
Yeah, she slays Dr. Mario. Again, she's good at, like, the Candy Crush Dr. Mario kind of thing. Like, she loves that. But if I were to bring up River City Girls, too, she'd be like, that's interesting. But she would have no compulsion to play. She doesn't like the Twitch gaming stuff, right? I put this on, and she was soaked into it. She wanted, like, this was, like, one of the few times where it's, like, it's sort of not even couch co-op. It's just sort of you're experiencing an interactive movie together. And, like, as we were going through, she started making predictions and, like, started thinking, like, what's going to happen with this person? Or why is this person this way? Can we go back and look in this room and see if we can find something else about that? Because if this was their twin brother, there was all this other stuff in the room we didn't get to look at. You know, it was really, really, really fascinating to see how certain kind of games can connect with people.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely one of those games that's fun to play alongside another person. Just to experience the story. Just to kind of see... Because each one of these characters is their own sort of... Imagine if... who's the director? Wes Anderson. Imagine if Wes Anderson, instead of his quirky kitsch, just tried to be a more straight-faced, sad, morose drama. It's kind of like that. And again, there are little, not puzzles, but little times where you actually do get to take over and do some stuff. Some weird surrealist things. Like, there's a part where you transform into a cat in a girl's dream. And you have to do stuff in the house. Hmm. You know, there's a truly tragic moment involving you performing the job of a guy that works at a cannery, like a fishing cannery. I won't spoil anything other than to say just get this game. Oh my gosh. Like, I know normally it retails for $20. I have a hard time telling anyone to pay. I mean, pay what you want to pay for any game. Like, if it's worth it to you, you'll like it. But for $5, like, oh my God, this is like, for the price of a Tuesday movie ticket, you get to see one of the better movies you're ever going to see. Like, this was a really genuinely great game, and it looks fantastic on the Switch. It's not a game, again, where you get to do a lot of stuff. It's not a gamey game. It's just sort of an interactive experience, and it's totally worth it.
I wonder if she'd like Return of the Obra Dinn.
She probably wouldn't.
No?
No. I think it's a... Well, you know, because she did watch a little bit of Sinking City with me as well. Mm-hmm. I was playing Sinking City. And that's very much a detective-y kind of game, like right. In a Lovecraft world.
Mm-hmm.
If she got into that, maybe she would like it.
And Return of the Obra Dinn is also very much more like stylized visual thing.
The black and white thing, yeah.
Yeah, you're not going through like a really detailed environment where you get to observe a lot of the things that are going on. Like, you do have to use a lot of powers of observation, but also like deductive skills. And you're not like, you're never getting like a high fidelity visual representation of this ship.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Wes, tag in.
So I bit the bullet, bought a PS5.
You mentioned this
because I wanted one.
Yeah, did I mention this on the show?
Yeah.
I don't think we did.
Yeah, you totally did.
So I already talked about Hogwarts then.
Oh, you talked about Hogwarts when you'd played like 5 hours of it.
Oh, okay.
And I assume you've been playing more of that because you haven't logged into your Switch. You dirty traitor!
I have not. Like, the last time I turned on my Switch was when I was here and we did those raids.
Yes, I know. But don't worry. I monitor your activity, sir.
Really creepy.
I Switch stalk you.
You don't monitor mine, though, right? Of course. It's just his.
Now, you have your set to private, so I can't.
Oh, my God. Wait, do I?
You can do that.
Yeah, you can do that. Like, we're Switch friends, but I can't see, like, what you've been playing recently.
That's probably for the best. It's all been hentai Mahjong games.
They have them.
Somebody was making...
Oh, they're so good.
Have you guys looked at the Switch shop recently?
Oh, all the time, yeah.
There's tons and tons of, like anime porn games.
Yeah, like, Pretty Girl Solitaire, and...
What is this? When did...
I mean, I doubt that they're just, like, straight up... Like,
I thought Nintendo. I thought we were better than this.
You're not seeing full penetration.
No, you're not like but seeing anything but skimpily dressed.
There's some pretty risque stuff on there, and like
risque, but not straight up.
Like, Nintendo is definitely not above this. They are just taking anyone's money to license game on their platform. They don't give a shit. It's actually
one of them was like a top 8 seller. Mm. On the download only games tab.
Yep.
Oh.
Because I guess it was like
maybe it was good.
$20 and it was marked down to $2 or something.
Yeah, that's something that'll happen. Like, developers and publishers will try to gain some visibility by taking their game down to like $1 or 15 cents. And enough people like peruse the deals page, like, oh, this game is this much. Who cares? I'll download it. And that bumps their numbers of downloads up. and they'll hang around like the top downloads page for a couple of days after the price goes back up to normal. So they get a few suckers who are like, why is this game in the top 10? Okay, I'll pay $10 for this. And then they've downloaded, you know, Succubus Hunter 5 and not know any better.
That one is a Square Enix game, though, so it's got some polish.
It's got some amazing names, too. Yes. But anyway, you're talking about Harry Potter or something?
Yeah, I was talking about Hogwarts.
Yeah. Thumbs up?
Oh, yeah, it's very good. It's an open world, so eventually the game, you get your broom, and that's when you can start going exploring everything. Because without it, then you're just running everywhere, and that's obnoxious. But there's a lot
of... It's like your fast travel?
Yeah. Well, you have fast travel. You have your regular... You unlock fast travel points and stuff like that. It's typical open world kind of game where there's little things to do on the maps. You got these little Merlin trials, which are like 2-minute-long puzzles you just quickly solve. And you do enough of those and your inventory expands. You know, things like that that they do in these open world kind of games. It has this cool mechanic that they did in Dragon Age Inquisition where it was kind of like... It looks like a sonar. You hear this little whistle, and then you see this little thing radiate out from you, and you can see like hidden stuff that you can collect on the map, like treasure chests or like plants you can collect. And they do that in Harry Potter as well with a spell. And I haven't really seen too many games do that, so I was happy to see that little mechanic, because I always liked it, because you could just see, oh, there's a fucking chest over there. Let's go get that. And all the chests, all that's in them, it's just fucking clothes. That's it. It's all clothes. It's just new gear. You cycle through so much fucking gear, it's absurd. But that's
your, or like the clothes, like they're like stat buffing things.
Yeah, they're just stat buffing. Okay. So you know, you're getting a bunch of stuff. I mean, just so much. Mm. It's crazy. And it's just weird to like go through this dark dungeon and just no one's been here for 1,000 years, and you open up a chest and it's like this goofy little hat. You're like, what the fuck? Like
it's the hat they were wearing 1,000 years ago.
And it's like, all right, apparently that's the style. I don't know, this is weird. There's a lot going on with the story, and there's this game. It's the thing that I find weird about this game, and really I don't find it weird at all, but it's just funny
because... Stand by, it is very weird.
Like, the books are a kid's book, and the movies, you know, they're PG-13 maybe on one of them. Like, I think they're just PG movies. But then you're dealing with things where it's not like gory or anything like that, but, you know, people died in the movies, but it's just flashlight and then he falls over, that's it. And this one, like, I walked into a house in a town that was overrun by spiders, and this lady was just straight up wrapped up in her living room, dead. And I'm like, oh, fuck. Like this game's got some, like, dark shit going on. Mm. There's this one quest that was a PS5 exclusive where you go through this little... You get trapped in this chest, and you end up going through this weird trick house that this ghost built, and there's like mannequins falling around, the lights are flickering, and they're That's a little fun. Bit closer and shit like yeah. that. It's really creepy. I was like, all right.
Did,
like
Little Nightmares too.
Yeah, it was great. I was like, this is really cool. Really flashy game and everything like that. There's a lot going on. I don't know. I can't even discuss it. It's just a really good game. And if you watch like 10 minutes of it, you'll know, yeah, this is a game to play. Like, it's just a really... The combat's a lot going on. You can constantly switch up how you want to do the combats. There's not really benefit in overusing one spell or another. It's just kind of what you want to do, and you can even change it up if you get bored of certain things. I got the dark, the unforgivable curses I just got, except the killing one. I don't have that one yet, but those are a lot of fun. It's good. I was doing all the side quests, and this game really does not mind giving you experience. Because the next thing I know, like, recommend level 16. I'm like, I'm 32. I don't...
Oh, like, well done.
Like, fuck.
Good for you.
Like,
that's some Xenoblade shit right there. Like, where's the quest? 20? I'm at 49.
That's cute. Like, it's just... But the difficulty... It does a cool thing where there's small little sections on the map. And the map is, like, it'll display the enemy's difficulty, like, level 10 to 20. But they'll scale with you as long as you're within that level.
Hmm.
So it does kind of keep the game close to you. So you're never, like, ridiculously overpowered. I'm playing on hard mode because it is still really freaking easy. The combat is essentially, he's got a purple bubble, so I use a purple spell to break the bubble. Now I can beat him up. Someone's about to shoot me. I see a red circle around my head.
With a gun?
Yeah, it was a spell.
Okay.
I see a red circle above my head. That means I have to physically move. I see a orange circle above my head. That means I can put up a shield and counter. That's it. Like it's just a color coded bun mashy spree, but it's still a lot of fun. Yeah, this is a great game.
Okay.
A lot of exploration. A lot of stuff to see.
Speaking of really dark games, I finished Kirby.
I would love to hear your rendition of Kirby. It's just the darkest thing out there. It's a black and white Kirby.
But the original Kirby was black and white. It's from the Game Boy.
It's a very dark Kirby.
Me and the children played almost the entire thing in co-op. I think there's only like one or two levels that I did by myself because they were going to bed and I wanted to like get to a certain point in the game. By the way, we went through like a lot of levels multiple times to get all the little collectible tchotchkes. There's really only like there's power spheres, like little gears in a bubble that you can collect. And you know, none of them are really all that tough. As long as you have the right power, you'll get to them. But yeah, they had a really good time with it. I had a good time with it. It's really what you expect from a 2D side-scrolling Kirby. There's nothing super surprising. The gimmick of this one was, in certain levels, there are enemies. There are scripted parts of a stage where you encounter an enemy who, when you absorb them, it gives you a superpower. So instead of just getting a regular sword, you get a gigantic sword. And when you hit the attack button, kind of the action freezes and a big sword swoops across and destroys everything on the screen. And there are, like I was saying, these scripted parts of levels where you get these things, so they plan on you having them. So they're kind of like your victory lap of the level. You get to go through the last, you know, 25% of the level with the superpower and not have to face much resistance. And after you beat the main quest, there is like this bonus, kind of like a side game or side content that you can do where you play through as the villain of the game, Magalore. Spoilers, because he's not presented as the villain at the beginning. But he takes a heel turn. And what you're doing is, it's like 20 levels, so it's pretty substantial what you unlock at the end of the game. And you are playing through these levels, and there's an economy to it where, you know, you run up combos defeating enemies, or you score hits on enemies without too much time passing between, and you can upgrade things like his ability to levitate, basically float in the air like Kirby. He has attack powers, attack range, things like you can give him a dash, and you can get up to like a triple dash. And if you're replaying levels, you'll end up with plenty of this currency in order to just kind of upgrade everything. But if you're just kind of playing straight through, you have to make some decisions about, okay, I'll try to upgrade this, but then I'll neglect upgrading that. So, you know, if you want to upgrade everything, it does get a bit grindy if you're into that sort of thing. But again, in typical Kirby fashion, it's not difficult. I think there's only one boss that has given me any sort of trouble so far. Most of the levels, they'll give you like a grading system. And it seems like the grading system is only based on how much of the currency you collect throughout the level. It doesn't matter like how long it takes or how much damage you take, as long as you get a lot of money. It goes from like bronze up to platinum. And most of the levels, I'm getting the platinum score first time through. A couple of them are more timing based. So offers a bit more of a challenge, but nothing too difficult. And you don't have to like get any of these achievements in order to move on. You can just play the level and keep on going. That one, the children haven't been playing a whole lot with me. Ripley was playing with me a little bit earlier today. And Mika played through, you know, maybe six or seven of these Magalore levels the other day. But once we finished with the Kirby stuff, they were kind of done with the game. You do also unlock a hard mode, which is pretty cool. And they give you like a lot of like chores you can do if you want to go for that 100% on like the start menu. So if you just beat the main game and collect everything, that's only going to give you like 30-35% to your completion. There are like all these side games and challenges. Okay, now you got to run through this level that we made specifically for the sword power, with your sword power, and you're going to get scored based on things like how much damage you take and how long it takes you to do. And those like challenge levels can be pretty taxing. It took me 4 or 5 tries to actually get the best score with the sword. But, you know, I was mostly playing this game for the co-op, so I didn't really bother going through many of the other challenge levels. But they're there. You can spend a good, like, probably 15, 20 hours with this game if you're looking to do everything. So you know, you get a bit of bang for your buck there. But overall, like, it's a remake of a Wii game that I owned.
I was just about to ask you about that.
Yeah.
So this is the deluxe edition of a game that came out, like you said, on the Wii in 2011?
Yep.
Very cool. Was this one really well received at the time?
It was pretty well received at the time. I think it was one. It was the first time in a while that Kirby went back to like Super Nintendo or Game Boy Advance like formula of a 2D side scrolling Kirby. So I think it was received well enough, like due to nostalgia.
The website jumbled up all the reviews, but it's a lot of like 9 out of 10s, mm-hmm. high 8 out of 10s.
Good yep. D-tier franchise.
you, how dare you, sir? How dare you?
I think Kirby was A tier.
Kirby's in the A tier.
Yeah, it's a good one.
But yeah, I recommend.
So wait, was the bonus Magalore stuff part of the deluxe, or was that in the original too?
No, that's part of new content.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. They made some new stuff there.
Mm-hmm. Like the Luigi run through. Mm-hmm. That's
it. Yeah. It's you're not playing through old levels. You're actually like, they built new
stuff.
Yeah, really cool. Ryan, you got one more?
I should play Shovel Knight again.
Yes, I do. I got one more game. Speaking of Shovel Knight, I've actually been playing Dead Cells. I got the Dead Cells. Looking back, I should have got the whole package, might as well, but I got the Dead Cells Castlevania one specifically.
Very cool.
Because it was on like a really nice sale. I want to say it was like 35% off or something. They've got like 3 other DLCs. I didn't grab those. It would have been a couple extra bucks to get those. I was like, I really just want to... I don't even know if I'm going to like this game.
Is it like its own set of levels, or...?
Like, the way that they all work is, you know, you'll start in your main world, and then you'll explore this one kind of area in a kind of Metroid-like way. And then there's different branching paths that you can take. And I gather that, you know, like, if you go... If you just had, like, the base form of the game, there's, like, one room to find, go to that one... Boss thing, yada yada, go to the next one, boss thing, yada yada, like that, and you'll play through and get to the end of the game. And I gather what happens is when you have all these DLC packs is you start having different branching paths that will randomly generate somewhere on the maps, because all of the maps are randomly generated.
Mm-hmm.
I love this game. It's great. Fucking Dead Cells is for real. I don't know why I wait. How old is this game now? It's been out for a long time now.
I'm going to guess 2019?
This is 2018 it mm-hmm. came out.
I was really excited when it came out, but it turns out I suck at this game, and so I hated it.
I hate to say this, this game's super fucking easy. This game is not hard at all.
Amazing.
I beat it on maybe my 6th playthrough.
Go fuck yourself, John. All right,
get good, Wes.
The first time I attempted the Castlevania DLC, I beat it.
See, I hate it when this happens. When you're like, this game is so fucking easy. Like, Cult of the Lamb. Like, the town building thing, perfectly fine. But I sucked at fighting the actual combat thing.
Maybe they had color coded.
I know, like Hogwarts. Yeah, exactly. Well, here's the thing. Fucking rocket that game. I'm a champ.
Well, there's the difference between like completing the game and quote unquote beating the game. I beat the game, only to unlock a scaling series of difficulties of 1 to 5. So I'm beat it at 0. I have not complete the game. It's the same way that Hades worked. Like, beating Hades is not... Once you kind of generally have done some playthroughs,
fucking forever to beat it for the first time.
You got to credits, but you haven't finished all the content.
Well, because from there, what will happen is then you go into heat mode. And the heat mode is just this giant chart where you can power up certain things, like, for your opponents. Meaning, like, your opponents have 20% more health. Your opponents start the game with a one-hit shield that absorbs all damage for the first attack. Like... Enemies move 20% faster, and you can increase the quote-unquote heat. So in the same way, that's how Dead Cells works. Like, Dead Cells at base, if you play these kind of, like, the roguelike dungeon crawlery kind of stuff, it ain't so bad. It's not so bad. And I bet I know what you fucked up on. You didn't know what to do with your points. You didn't know where to put your skill points.
You gotta know where to put those skill points. Not skill points,
but you're... I mean, I got to the final boss a couple times, and I just... With, like, five times in between each of those a couple of times, like, I just... Yeah. It just fucking sucked. It was so hard to get there and just not be, like, crawling because my legs are broken. Like, it just...
Did you try using your gun?
There's only a few items that have guns.
I hate you, John.
I didn't realize there were any guns.
There's actually... Well, there's two really fun ones. There's a saber-pistol combo that you can carry as one item.
Who needs courage when you have a gun?
There's also the hyper-light drifter sword and gun combo.
Nice!
They included... this game seems to very much love all of the other edits. That's why when you mentioned Shovel Knight, you can get Shovel Knight's shovel. Hmm. You can get... isn't there a luchador game or something like that?
Yeah.
Guacamelee.
You can get, like, something he does, I guess, where he turns into a
chicken.
A chicken and runs around and drops bombs.
Yep. It's like that game's version of a morph ball.
Yeah. You can get the nail from Hollow Knight.
Oh, that's fun.
So, again, just to start from the top of like, what you're actually doing here, it's essentially three colors that determine what kind of character you're building, and you pick up them up based on the items you get. A sword is regarded as a red item. I guess you could generally think of them as, like, red is strength, green is dexterity, or purple is dexterity, and green is sort of survivability, fortitude. Hard to describe.
Constitution,
sure.
HP.
So different types of weapons do different things. So you pick up a sword, that's going to be more of like a red item. If you pick up a bow and arrow, that's going to be purple. If you pick up a big mallet, that's going to be a green item. You know, so there's different ways to play. And I think as you're going along, especially, you know, as you play through the game, you get different skill stacks. Like, you'll get a thing and it's like, do you want to power up red, purple, or green? And it's like, well, one of my items is red, one of my items is purple. I guess I'll oscillate back and forth between those, but then it gets to a point where it's like you feel like there's diminishing returns on these. Like, well, maybe I should put in some green points. I get 40% more HP if I put in my green point. Don't do that. Every single skill you get should go directly towards one, and pick that one and fucking stick with it. So for me, for example, purple. Like, I have not even tried using red. I don't even try to use green. There, every once in a while, you'll get one of those upgrade cards. There's usually about two or three per map you're doing before you move on to the next map. Sometimes there will only be two options, so you have to choose between the two you don't want. And in that case, just go with whatever one's going to give you more HP. Sure. If you have a choice, always go with your main one. As I understand, the damage scales exponentially. So if you're not doing that, you're going to fall behind really fast. And if you do with that, you will keep up with some amazing amount of damage. I literally beat the final boss in about 10 seconds. I just faced him hard. Went right into his grill and just killed him instantly. And I thought, because there's another, like, he's like the big bodyguard of this, like, king. I thought it was going to be like, oh man, there's going to be another fight. This king's going to come up and he's going to show me what's up, because this was just like the starter. No! Credits started rolling. That was the game.
You did it. Party poppers went off.
You know? And I think that if you were playing this through, you'd probably think, I want to balance it out. Like, sure, I want to have a red thing and a purple thing and a green thing. And it's just like, that's confusing. Don't do that. Just stick with one and you know, you'll be fine. And if you want some good builds, certain bow and arrows are really, really strong. You know, I like, there's this one bow that shoots fewer arrows, but they're like fucking hard-ass arrows. I think it's called the assault bow. So, like,
damn, they can have to play this game just so I can... Just be able to look it right in the face again.
To, like, restore some of your pride.
I'm ashamed of myself. Like, God. I just feel like weeping in this corner over here.
They make these things called wolf traps. They're a purple item as well. And they make, I think it's like a skewer slicer. I forget what the fuck they call it. But it's a little stationary turret. And mind you, oftentimes they have stats that will boost the other. So, like, you throw down the wolf trap, and then you throw the thing in front of them, and you just kind of, like, hang out in the ledge above them and watch the enemies just, like, fucking melt. Like, there's all kinds of fun little way. Like, when I realized I didn't even have to directly attack anything, I could just literally go around throwing out wolf traps and slicers. Like, it's so fun. The game
plays itself.
The game is cruel, though. If you're not careful, you can die pretty easily. Early on, if, again, like I said, I beat it by the time I had maybe like 6th or 7th playthrough. I did die a bunch before that, you know? At every point I got, I put into the flasks. You get extra flasks, they heal you up. And once you leave a room, you go into another room to spend all the souls you captured to boost up these intangibles. And then you go into the next one, but then they top you off. So any flasks you use, they'll heal you up. Whatever was left of your health bar, they'll heal you up too. Like, what I realize is the best approach is, like, when you go into a new area, find your exit as quickly as you can, but don't go through the exit. Find the exit so you know you can escape the room if you have to. Then, depending upon how tough the area is, use every little bit of life you have available to just explore and uncover as much of the map as you can. And then if you get to that part where you don't have any more flasks and you've got only like a quarter of your health left, get the fuck out of there. Go to the exit. You'll heal up. You'll move on to the next thing. Otherwise, just fucking get everything. That's the best way to power up your character, is just to find everything on the maps and then keep pushing forward. So, having now played, and I'm not even going to fucking talk about it, but I got the game Salt and Sanctuary. That game's fucking hard.
Yeah.
And that game is very much like the Dark Souls style, where I've got like I've got a stamina bar. Don't ever give me a fucking stamina bar. I hate this shit. Like, you know,
what about in Breath of the Wild?
Dead Cells does not give you a stamina. Oh, well, I mean, Breath of the Wild is not like not that kind of game.
Right, it's perfect. It's a perfect game.
Yeah. And they also put the stamina bar right in the middle, so you're always looking at it, but yep. It's not too big. It's just right there with your character. You are like...
Mm-hmm.
It
displays information so effectively.
I am so empowered in that game, and I can't wait. May, right?
Really? May 12th.
6 weeks away.
Yep. It's close.
All right. At any rate, no. So, I'd say, especially now that you've played a lot of, a lot of Hades, I would say go back and give it another shot and tell me that game's hard. It's not that bad.
Yeah, give it another shot.
What is it, what is it that makes it like Castlevania DLC? Is it like purely aesthetic stuff?
They give you a bunch of weapons, like the characters. I'm not a big Castlevania guy. I knew like three or four of the tunes just because they're like classic Castlevania tunes. Oh, you get three soundtracks. The menu option. This is like a great options menu because there's so much customizable shit in it all over the place. You can change all these weird little settings in the game. It's nice. One of the things is there's three different soundtracks. There's like the orchestral version they have, the 8-bit score of it, and then the Castlevania score. Now that and I'm sure the other DLCs probably have other scores too. But yeah, so all of those songs. A lot of the weapons, like there's like a whip you get, and I want to say like...
The vampire killer?
Is there like a fire bomb thing that you throw?
Holy water.
Probably some holy water.
Yeah, holy water type thing. Trying to think of what else. There's a bunch of stuff. And all of the characters are in there too. I don't know the bad guys that well, but I'm pretty sure I fought like the
flamethrower.
Yeah, and that's how it was too, by the way. Like, it's not its own branching path. It leads you back into the game. So again, you start in your main world. I can either choose to go one way, which would be like the normal main storyline path, or I can take the Castlevania route. I go to the Castlevania stuff, I do a bunch of stuff there. It dumps me back into like the third act of the normal game. And then when I'm in the fourth act or whatever, I get another branching path to go back into Castlevania mode to meet the Castlevania side of the game. And then go back to the final boss of the game. So you kind of weave in and out of the narrative as you want. And yeah, and also the Castlevania stuff is like, it's pretty, you can crank out damage like crazy and all the bosses. Again, that's always been my problem is like fucking these kinds of games, they're bosses. I just hate that. You know, these bosses feel more like Mega Man bosses. You just do the right things at the right times and they just die instantly. And again, no stamina bar. I can just do as much as I want anytime I want. The game's not going to stop me. So... Really, really like this. Oh, and yeah, there's just so fucking much to unlock. It's crazy. This is definitely one of those games that wants you to spend 200 run-throughs to just unlock. There's probably 100 different character outfits. There's maybe 200 or 300 items.
Yeah, this is a game that has gotten tons of post-launch content. Like this Castlevania stuff just came out this month, and the game is 6 years old. So there's a lot of stuff they've been churning out. We hardly mentioned this game. Like we talked about it like a couple months after it launched, but they've been pretty consistently adding stuff.
Yeah. So totally would recommend. And again, I think this is another one I got on sale. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would try it. I've heard of its reputation as being a difficult game. And I wanted to see if it really was that difficult. And I think it can be, but there's some ways to make it not hard at all.
Very cool.
Yeah, really good game. Really good game.
I got one more, and then we'll move on really quick. I played through the demo of Bayonetta Origins. It's like an hour and a half demo. There is an unskippable story segment right at the beginning. The rest of the story stuff you can speed through, but like the first 5 minutes of the game, you have to like go through at the game's pace. Really good. I'm really liking it. It reminds me a lot of Hob, which I think is something that we talked about before. Like these kind of like top down exploration based. I got into like one or two actual fights. I've heard like the combat can be pretty pervasive throughout the game. We'll see when I get my copy on
what does that word mean?
Tuesday. Just kind of throughout.
Prevalent.
But I don't know. Like
I learned something today.
It is that sort of combat like we saw sort of adjacent to Astral Chain where you're controlling one character with one stick and the other character with another stick and you have to have them work in congress to get through these fights proficiently. Played a couple of fights, seemed easy enough. I've definitely been able to tell that there are places in this demo that I'll be able to go back to once I learn some sort of new skill. So it seems like rather than being like level based, where you know you play through this one segment of the game, then you move on to the next, there are going to be points where you're backtracking or paths are going to be crisscrossing, leading you back through areas you've been in before. We'll see if it becomes like as intricate as something like Hob, but I definitely appreciate that sort of exploration based puzzle solving, and really dig the art style. Hob also had a really great art style to it. But yeah, I don't really have anything else to say other than, yeah, seems good. We'll talk about this one later in the month when we do the official show.
We might talk about Bayonetta here in a minute, in fact.
We certainly will, because we're going to do some tier rankings right here, right now.
Oh, strip, you're in your...
Maybe not right now.
Like, messed it up.
not right now, maybe just quick break.
Yeah, sure. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back with our tier rankings. Okay, now we're going to do tier rankings.
Yeah,
let's do after it. This break.
Where do you want to start?
Do you want to grab one first, or should I go first?
Why don't we start with Bayonetta, because we had that
that transition
that got fucked up.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so...
You're leading this one.
To kick things off, I got Bayonetta. Not really a Nintendo game, but it's Nintendo adjacent. It is closely associated with Nintendo enough to where I... say, fuck it, let's put it in the tier.
I mean, it's only on Nintendo now, right?
It is only on Nintendo now. The property is actually owned by Sega. It's not even owned by Platinum. Sega holds the IP. Platinum develops all the games. So just like the high-level view, it is a character action game with a heavy emphasis on making custom combos with your inputs.
She gets naked all the time.
Yep, because like her clothes are made out of her hair. That's where Umbral witches, derive their powers from their hair. And they use their powers to summon demons from hell to do their attacking for them.
It's what Shantae strives to be.
Exactly, except she's a genie, not a witch.
Well, excuse me.
Actually, Wes.
Excuse me. All right. Oh my gosh.
Come on, Wes.
How racist of me.
You fucking dork. So Bayonetta, it's a very flamboyant, bombastic character with lots of crazy designs and fighting styles. The series was created by Hideki Kamiya, who is the creator of Devil May Cry. You'll probably recognize that as another...
I did not know that.
Yep.
That's fun.
Yep. So let's get into some of the specifics. As for the longevity, the original game came out in 2009, had sequels in 2014 and 2022. With another sequel coming in just a few days now. Kind of a spin-off game.
Prequel style, yeah.
It almost didn't survive its first game. So Platinum was making a sequel to the original Bayonetta. Sega canceled it, because Sega, of course, is the IP holder. Around that time, it was obviously before 2014, but around that time, Nintendo stepped in and offered to finish funding the game's development, of course making it a Wii U exclusive, and when it released in 2014. And that's how it ended up associated with Nintendo, because at that point forward, it was like, okay, Nintendo funded this game. Nintendo also, I believe, funded at least in part Bayonetta 3. it kind of became like this handshake agreement, like, okay, if there's going to be future Bayonetta games, they will be Nintendo games. But three games starting in 2009, I think that's good enough for a C for longevity. It's been around for not too long, but it seems to be a franchise that's able to keep going. Iconography, really recognizable main character in gaming.
Real quick point though.
Yeah.
When you say that it was out in 2009, are you talking about the PS3 and Xbox versions?
Yeah, it wasn't even a Nintendo game.
It wasn't even on the Nintendo until 2014.
Sure.
Are you saying his longevity should start at 2014?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, I think at this point now it's sold more on Nintendo, but there was a long time in the existence of this franchise. It's most of its sales were on competing consoles.
We can get into the minutiae of... We're not going to talk about a whole lot of... I'm not going to fight. It doesn't really matter to me either way.
Good. I think we should fight.
No.
I think we should... If Star Wars fans saw us anything, we got to fight all the time over every little thing.
Well, like, we're not going to talk about a whole lot of franchises that will start off on another console, so I don't think it's a topic that... Like, if you want to start at 2014, it doesn't matter to me. Yeah. But as far as iconography, really recognizable main character in gaming circles, not really so much like a mainstream character with the normies. I think it's good enough for a B.
Is this one of those things where her name is Cereza?
Right.
It's not Bayonetta.
Bayonetta is a title that gets passed down.
I see.
And because that's not something that was really like known in the series until the third game.
Okay.
Her name... She was synonymous with the title of the game. And I don't think you even learn, like, her actual name until... Was it Bayonetta 2? I don't know. The narratives of these games make no sense.
It's like how everybody thought Link's name was Zelda.
Right. The Zelda, the green guy who rescues the princess.
Yeah.
As far as sales, it's not a series that sells particularly well, but it does keep on trucking. Bayonetta 1, back in 2009, shipped, in quotes, 1 million units. It has released on multiple systems now, both physically and digitally, so it's probably broken through the million mark by now. Bayonetta 2 sold 300,000 on the Wii U, which is not good. Switch version did manage to sell 1 million, though.
Okay, yeah, I was about to say, but that's got to be also because it's on the Wii U.
Well, yeah, the Wii U is where a lot of great games went to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Bayonetta 3... We did talk about this a few weeks ago. Did manage to sell 1 million units, so that's
kind of like that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's sort of like our mark of buoyancy. Like, hey, you're a series that's probably going to keep going if you can break that mark. Mm-hmm. So you know, I think like the series is definitely on the upswing. Like, it's a series that's trending upwards. I don't expect the Bayonetta Origins game to break 1 million in sales because it is a spin-off game, and it's definitely not within like the same sort of mainline gameplay style.
Yeah, I was surprised this thing's got the full ticket price, even. I was expecting something a little lower on that.
I was surprised about that, too.
I was really stunned to see the $59. I was like, fuck, all right. Like,
I'll admit, I got a little bit of sticker shock from that one. But, hey, it is what it is. Like, if I'm not going to miss that extra $20 if I think it should actually cost $40 and cost $60, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah, you buy Little Nightmares.
I did buy Little Nightmares is good.
8 hour game for $40.
As far as like its prestige or its notoriety, it is a game that's pretty, you know, regularly pushed by Nintendo. It fills a gap in their library. They don't have like their own.
I had 3 points I wanted to make about it, and that's one of them right there. I think that it fills a niche of a game that they don't have aside from what their Dynasty Warrior games are, essentially. And you don't want to make another Dynasty Warriors. This is just like a fun hack and slash.
It's third person, like,
you can't really compare it to a game. Dynasty Warriors. Dynasty Warriors, you're like hacking through a giant army of things. And this is more like just some enemies.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like, hack and slash. Yeah.
You're going around in this 3D environment, hack and slash, beat 'em up. But like a Devil May Cry is the more appropriate comparison, mm-hmm. Sure. But the closest thing to that on the Switch that would be their own shit would be like one of the Dynasty Warriors
films. Yeah, like the Hyrule Warriors. Yeah. That might be the closest like Nintendo adjacent thing that exists. So this is something they don't do. Yeah. So they're getting somebody to do it for them. Always reviews quite well. Bayonetta is playable in 2 Smash Brothers characters now. Counts for something. Cool. So you know, I think, in my opinion, this game kind of a C.
Yeah.
It does all right.
Can I, before we do the actual rankings, can I give you like a food for thought? I have a food for thought and a sales pitch. I had a lot nested into one that was technically yours.
Okay.
My food for thought, is the series too edgelord for its own good? Is it too like sexed up and occult and teenage boy driven for the Switch, which is essentially like a at-home family console designed for like multiple gamers playing. Is this really the right medium for a game?
We got Succubus 5 as well on like the eighth slot on the show. Come on.
I think like that's we've talked about a couple
of things. Is it hard for them to market this game to what it truly is and the people that would buy it?
Maybe. I think it's a bit of a nebulous area, and I think you could take multiple sides on this one. We've never really engaged with a sort of discourse on Bayonetta, because we talked about a couple of these games now, but there's always a few different camps when this game comes out. Like, is this an objectified female character? Is this an empowered female character because she owns her sexuality like that? And there are people across the spectrum that think different things about this character. I think as far as like its place on a Nintendo console, because Nintendo doesn't do that sort of sexualization of characters often. We do have Candy Kong. She exists.
Yeah.
It makes everybody uncomfortable. But I think it is like silly enough. It's not self-serious enough to where it would be totally out of place on Nintendo system.
You know, like on the PlayStation, they can have a game like Blood Rain where you're like a big titted vampire
that was also on GameCube
slaughtering Nazis.
yeah,
you know, with like there was literally breast physics in that game, you know, but nobody bats an eyelash. And then it's kind of funny that you bring up that it's on the GameCube.
Yeah,
I know it is a PlayStation game.
Yeah, it's the first one is on the GameCube, and then they stopped putting them on the GameCube.
You know,
it's, which thank you for that. I appreciate it.
Blood Rain is a great game, by the way. It totally revels in all that horrible shit, but it's a fun game.
Mm.
But that's beside the point. I don't know. I think it is kind of interesting that I wonder if this game in a different mode or mindset would sell better. I don't know. I don't think it would, honestly. I just think it's funny that this is kind of one of the more edgy properties that exists within Nintendo. Again, Nintendo's not making like a topless Mahjong game, right? That's just a thing that some third party is putting on their store for $1.99 to, you know, chunk up
to exploit people. Yeah,
yeah, that was my food for thought.
I
was
is it actually a Mahjong game?
Yeah.
I
have
I thought you were joking about that.
No, it's a real Mahjong game. I have a sales pitch. How's about a Brawl style game, but it's Virtuous Fighter? Like, it's a 3D kind of game where you're moving around each other and you get to have characters from ARMS. You get this character right here. You could have Samus with their whip. You could, rather than
doing the Travis touchdown from No More Heroes.
Yeah, yeah. You could just kind of have, you know, sort of like that classic Virtua Fighter setup.
Hmm.
But it would just be the wheelhouse of, you know, Nintendo IP characters.
Yeah, yeah. So the sort of like the more violent version of Smash Brothers and more of like a polygonal fighter.
Yeah, because Smash ain't going anywhere. Smash is the king of the hill in that regard. I don't even think it has any serious competition coming from anywhere. But this could be a chance for them to
play. PlayStation has that All-Star game.
That tremendous game.
Yeah, that everyone you can play as Bugs Bunny. Oh my god.
Can you really?
I think he's on there.
I heard Disney's working on a competing one too.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, god. They'll have all the Marvel characters in there.
Yeah. Did you want to do a breakdown by thing, or do you just want to flatly say, call it a C?
Oh, I was, did I remember to do that as well? I was given longevity a C, maybe a D. Didn't really, either way, I'm fine with it. Iconography, I think, would be really, really recognizable with within the gaming community, but it hasn't really found that mainstream success. Sales, D, good enough to keep on going, and as far as like prestige, because it fills that gap in all those reviews well. A C, kind of average out to a C overall.
Yeah, pretty much agreed on all points. I have it as a C-, but C-, sure.
Cool. That
makes sense.
Stick it in the C tier.
Mm-hmm.
Which one you want to go with?
I'll go with the first one I got listed here, a game called Another Code.
I know the one.
Yeah, okay. So this was...
I know the two.
Yeah, right. So this was made by Sing. Am I saying that right, or is it King?
Yes, Sing.
Sing. They're now bankrupt, but they pretty much exclusively worked with Nintendo.
They no longer exist.
Yeah, it ceases to exist. So these are essentially Myst-style puzzle-solving games. You know, it requires you to sort of navigate through environments. It depends on which version of the game you're playing, too, because like you said, there are two games, but it's essentially you've got one game which is like top-down, and then you're walking around and you're clicking on things. And then when you click on a thing, it gives you this very hyper detailed picture, and there's usually inside of it some kind of puzzle you get to mess around with. And then the other one is literally, and I believe that one's on the Wii U, is literally just a point and click adventure in its truest form. You're going around and tapping the direction you want to go,
standard looking Wii
on things, and
They're the original Wii, and in Japan and Europe only.
So yeah, can't find sales data on this, really, so it may be sold somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 200,000 units.
Here's one of them.
Yeah, you got it right there. Trace memory. And yeah, so it reviewed, you know, this is sort of standard for all of these puzzly point-and-click adventure games like Myst, or aside with the exception of probably Myst, they all get amazing reviews, but they sell terribly. And yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard. I didn't play these games myself, so I can't really say. I mean, I have all of this information in front of me, but all I can say, and maybe I'm feeling this way about this game because I just played a great game like What Remains of Edith Finch. I think this game is just a little too ahead of its time. I think that what separates this from Monkey Island is that Monkey Island is silly. And you're a fucking swashbuckling con artist kid who may not even understand that he's in a video game. You know, it's just so laughably weird. Or like a Sam and Max game, you know, where there's a lot of comedy and humor. This one's kind of playing it straight. This one actually seems like it wants to tell a much more interesting story about characters. And I think that nowadays you've seen games like Life is Strange, Disco Elysium, Kentucky Route Zero. All these games not only sell well, they get great reviews. It's a sort of a game that exists now that didn't back in fucking mid-2000...
2006 and 2009.
Yeah, right? Like, I think that if there was a good game here, people may not have known it, and no one ever bought it and played it, except for maybe you.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point, because the game, it wasn't a genre, the sort of point-and-click adventure that was really present on like handheld systems or home consoles at the point. It was filling a niche that nobody was really asking to be filled. And one of the other things that was sort of maligned about this game when it came out was that like it's this adventure game that takes like maybe 5 to 6 hours to play through, which the sort of the Overton window of preferences of how people want to consume games has shifted to where that's, you know, something you can finish over a weekend and play through this narrative focused puzzle game is much more in vogue than it was 15, 20 years ago. So
you're saying that people felt they were bereft of content? There needed to be more game there,
right? The one of the reviews I was reading specifically was that like if you're paying the price that you're paying for a brand new game, they wanted more content out of it rather than like this is the complete experience as the developer wanted it to be presented.
Well, there is something to say to that, where once you know how to solve a puzzle. And you are just going to remember that the next playthrough, like, that kind of takes a component out of it. You really have to have a good story or something interesting to really bring people back. Like they would say that the laughs would for a Sam and Max game.
Yeah.
Some people just like that.
Yeah, and it's got to be a difficult balancing act to achieve when you're making a game like this. Because like if you're making like a narrative-based puzzle game, you might not be thinking of like replayability. Like, why would somebody play this twice? But that is something that people think about when they're buying a game, is like, how much am I going to get out of this? It's kind of unfortunate because, like you were saying, it's kind of maybe it would not have been a successful game if it came out now. I think it would have had much more of a chance if it came out now on a Switch eShop downloadable game, something like that.
Yeah, and again, everything I see about it is that this is very down to earth. Like, the characters are just normal people, it would seem. It's not like this is some, you know, zany series of cartoon characters getting into mischief. No, I think that it kind of wants to be real. So, again, I would be interested to see how something like this would be received today if it were made, you know, with a modern audience in mind. Or maybe if they just, I don't know, are these even available outside of the DS? Did they ever bother to try to port anything? Why would they? This thing barely sold like fucking 200,000 units.
Right. Right, yeah, this thing
even in really Japan, which where it sold best, would say that it sold bad.
Yeah, it's the developer is defunct. This series is dead. There's no real chance of any sort of franchise care or new installment. This was a flash in the pan that barely even made a spark.
Yeah, not that we need to... Oh, go ahead. What's
up? We can just keep bringing it up on podcasts now until they bring it back. Because, you know, we do have that power.
You do have that kind of psychic link with them, Wes. If you feel like making it happen, another Code 3. Should they even try to continue with whatever the fuck happened there?
Well, this kind of adventure game, I guess, was most recently sort of revived at Nintendo with those Famicom Detective Club games that came out a year or two back.
Yeah.
Which were remakes of games that were out on the original Famicom in Japan. I don't think they ever released in North America. So I think that, you know, every once in a while they'll make an attempt to sort of fill that hole in their library with these sort of point-and-click adventure games, but they hardly ever move the needle.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I guess if we had to go through all of the rankings, you can imagine there's some pretty low scores here. Gets it, in my opinion, a D for longevity, an F for sales, got good reviews. I guess we'll give it an A. That's nice. There's nothing memorable or recognizable about this. Give it an F. I have it as a high F.
It is an F-tier game, for sure.
It is an F-tier game.
It is a series that is dead and never coming back.
Yeah, but a little bit about Pikmin, though.
You son of a bitch.
I'm kidding.
What is it? We're just going to find your body somewhere, and the cops are immediately going to go to John.
These look like Pikmin marks on him.
What's a bird? Electrocuted and clubbed him.
What's a Pikmin? Let's talk about Fatal Frame, fellas.
Yeah, let's do it.
Fatal Frame.
Another one where I'm like, it's a Nintendo property?
Sort of. It's in us. It's a similar situation to Bayonetta. It's a bit more complex, though. A lot of the confusion around where this property sits come from a report in 2012 that a website, a reputable place at the time, had published, and probably ended up with a mistranslation. So back in 2012, there were some reports that Nintendo had purchased / obtained co-ownership to the Fatal Frame, or as is known in Japan, Project Zero, intellectual property. It's probably based on a misinterpretation, especially since there have been ports of the fourth and fifth installments of the series that have now come out on other platforms. Nintendo doesn't share, so it seems unlikely that they own this intellectual property and are just like, yeah, go ahead and put it on other systems. So this was probably more of like a handshake and funding agreement where the fourth and fifth games in the series would not have existed without Nintendo stepping in and being, okay, we'll fund these games for the Wii and the Wii U. But then once like a certain period of time had passed, they were free. Tecmo Koei, who is the publisher of these series, were free to put them onto other systems. And we did get the port of 5, which was on the Wii U originally, onto Switch. And as of an hour and 15 minutes from now, at midnight on the 17th, we'll be getting the remake of 4 on the Switch. Digital only. This game only releases digital now in North America, but we have our physical copies coming. They have shipped.
Oh, very good. Very good.
So this is a horror game, but it's not really a survival horror game. You don't have things like lateral puzzles or scarcity management. You don't really have any inventory to work with at all, but it's really super atmospheric. Your only like method
it's
of
somewhere where Resident Evil meets Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, that sounds about right. And you do have ghosts in it. Your only like line of defense is the camera, which is about as passive as you can get in terms of like some sort of combat device. And the gameplay revolves around taking the pictures at the appropriate time and positions in order to maximize the damage that you're doing to these ghosts. When they're about to attack you, you're kind of doing like a counterattack with snapping your picture, and that's your Fatal Frame shot. So this first came to Nintendo systems on the Wii in 2008 with the fourth installment, I believe it was. They also did a remake of the second game. Neither of those came to North America, which is very disappointing. All the previous games, 1 through 3, were on the PS2. So I guess it just depends on where you want to put the starting point of this series. Like, this and Bayonetta are probably the only two series that we're going to talk about that started out
it on other systems. It is kind of weird. Yeah, like, 2001 is when the game was first released on the PS2.
Right.
We're literally going to talk about it next.
Retro Shell.
Yeah. Yeah, the next retro show is when the U.S. release of the first Fatal Frame comes to the PS2.
Mm. So, you know, if you're...
But then you're saying... It's not that long. I mean, it's 7 years later is kind of a long time, I guess. But not that long down the road, relatively speaking, where we're going to get it on Wii. Mm-hmm. Right? So
we've had a couple of installments on Nintendo systems stretching back to 2008. And ports and remakes have happened as well. There was a 3DS spinoff called Spirit Camera.
I saw that.
Which did not review particularly well. So as far as longevity, maybe a B or a C. It stuck around for a while, especially on older system. It was it is funny to think that between 2001 and 2006, there are three installments of the series, and between 2006 and now, there have been two new games and a spinoff.
Yeah.
As far as iconography, there's no real main character or figure mascot to attach onto. So a D. At best. The sales are not good. There's not a whole lot of information, but as a series...
There are 10 people saying how much they love this game for every one person that actually played it.
Right. There are, as a series total, about 1.3 million since 2001. That's not good.
That's terrible.
That is real
bad. Arms sold 2.5 million.
It is impressive that this series exists still.
Yeah.
Somebody
holy
this.
Shit.
This is a passion project. It's tough to give this any higher than an F. For sales, usually reserve the F score for something like this. This has failed. It is totally done. It's never coming back. But they're still making these games against all logic, and I'm buying them.
Same.
But
you're paying $100 for us to have two copies.
I'm
never going to pay you.
Then you're never getting it.
It's revenge for not getting one for the last one.
Stay out of this, motherfucker.
That's why I already stole it. Don't worry about it.
And as far as prestige, would this series exist if Nintendo didn't come in and fund these games? And why would Nintendo do this if not to like with Bayonetta, fill out part of their portfolio that they don't do?
I mean,
if Nintendo didn't need this gap filled in their library, would this game exist? Would this series exist?
It's a novel concept for a game, and I think it actually is cool that it's sort of a quote unquote clean horror game.
Yeah.
And I actually, and this makes me want to rank it even lower, this observation of mine, and I have to bring it up and I feel bad about doing so. But we talked about how, Star Fox, the victim of poor timing, how many titles they had where they released it on dead consoles or just in these windows, they completely missed the success of Wii.
Or a series with poor franchise care where they're, releasing, the core game too late and doing, these weird experimental things too early.
This was released in 2001 during the peak of America's consumption of not only J-horror, Japanese horror films. This was piggybacking on the success of things like The Ring and The Grudge. Mm. This was so pop culture topical, right? It's playing on series that are already successful. Resident Evil, Silent Hill, very successful franchises. They can't eke out a million sales when you couldn't have dropped a pin on a better day to release this game than at the peak of everything that this game is about.
And it still sucks
in sales.
And we'll talk about it when we do the retro show. There's not much in the way of high-profile competition coming out around it.
Yeah.
This game, it's had opportunities to be, a standout. Something like, hey, here's something unique and different and something that you might want to try, but has never been able to move the needle. And it's kind of gotten, middling reviews throughout the entire franchise. The early on, generally positive. Now pretty mixed because it seems like the main complaints are that the franchise has kind of failed to evolve or is kind of mechanically stagnant.
Yeah. Also, as I understand, I think two more interesting things, I guess, would be that this is the first attempt at telling a Japanese narrative.
Mm.
If you think about Resident Evil set in Raccoon City, bumfuck USA, and then you've got Silent Hill also set in America. I feel they're trying to appeal to American audiences with those titles. Fatal Frame is really, it's in Japan. It's got its own culture and aesthetic to it that doesn't necessarily translate to America.
Yeah, and it has also just a very different tone to it than those other games. This is a very like morose, mm-hmm. very plotting narrative that you're working through.
Yeah. Also, people seem to Silent Hill. Fatal Frame 2 seems to be the one people really liked. The first Fatal Frame, people are like, it was weird, and like the apparently they were explaining that the whole thing is that you have to wait till the monster's like right on top of you and you can't even see it, but it has to be super close to your camera for you to effectively dispel it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, in Fatal Frame 2, you get all these other ways to sort of upgrade your camera, not just that you have different film, but there's all these different stuff you can do with the camera itself. Yeah. That give you more like combo points to deal the damage to dispel them.
And that's something that's carried forward into the fifth entry of the series, Maiden of Blackwater, where you're not necessarily having to wait for that like counter shot. You can start snapping pictures and it will start dispelling like chunks of the ghost. And the more that you can capture in frame, the easier it is to keep on racking up damage.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a series that, despite all signs to the contrary, still exists. There's another entry coming out in mere minutes.
Yes. The series itself is like the ghost demanding to be snapped. Like,
yeah, it can't.
The next year, Fatal Frame 5.
Again? Fatal Frame is already on Switch.
I was just making a joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're doing great.
I was trying to make a joke that they're making a new one.
Yeah, it was a good one. Yeah. It's a good joke.
I'm funny. Screw you guys. Nice. I'm here. I'm trying.
This one.
Ryan fucking good at Dead Cells. You.
I didn't mean to. I'm not trying to twist the knife there. Ball. But I think there will come a point when you get good at games and things are really turn around for you.
This is a bad show for me. Yeah.
You're going to turn around on the retro show. You're always shining.
I think this is one of those, you know, like, remember The Secret from the early 2000s? This is like you project upon yourself certain things. If you just pick that controller up and like, I'm good at Dead Cells, and then you play it, I bet you will be good at Dead Cells. Part of your obstacle in overcoming it is just assuming that you're not good at it.
You just gotta get a text like 3 in the morning, my Switch broke in half. Fuck, you're right.
No, we're gonna get a text at 2 a.m. saying I beat it. It's like, I knew you could do it.
Yeah. I don't need a pity party, guys. All right, let's move on. I don't need your pity.
What would you rather do? Would you rather like go home and accomplish this thing and things makes you really great? Or would you rather go home and continue to work on your little models?
Oh. All right, good show, guys. I'll see you next week.
No, I believe in you, West. You can do it. But
he's got one in his pocket. He's got some models on him right now.
So, like I was saying earlier, yeah. I reserve my F-tier scores for franchises that are dead and never coming back. This one continues to exist. I think this is a low deer. God damn it. A low
deer. There's a deer?
Shut up. We're getting back on track.
Oh, I screw up. We focus on it for hours.
No. Everything's fine.
I think this is more of an elk.
Stick with it.
You know?
I stand by it. This is a deer tier franchise.
Yes.
This is what happens when we're...
Oh my God, John Deere.
You found the line. Yes. You found it.
So, they wouldn't be to kill a joke.
A super low deer.
God fucking damn it. I was tempted to put it in caribou.
This is all staying in. If I do it one more time, we're ending the show right there.
I feel better about myself now.
Super low D tier. I think I was combining D and tier and saying deer. Super low D tier. Because they're still making games.
Again, I think that people talk about this one, though. Again, it maybe didn't sell that well, but people were sure, I guess, passing around the disc enough that people did play it. Like, everyone talks about this game. This game had tons and tons of retrospective videos and in-depth 2-hour-long things about why this game is wonderful. And it's like every person that played this game felt like they had to make a 2.5-hour thing about it. So, like, I don't know. I'm not going higher than a D, of course. I have a D+, actually.
Okay.
This game just manages to not die. You cannot put this thing in the grave. So, you know, good for it. And hey, maybe if it sells half decently well, we could get a revamp to this franchise because it's kind of a cool concept. Really cool concept.
Yeah, I really dig the concept. I dig like the atmosphere that they always bring to the game. Always looks for the systems that they're on visually pretty good. So
titles alone, Maiden of the Black Water, yes. Mask of the Lunar Eclipse. These are great. Great titles.
Yeah. These are S tier titles.
Yes, certainly.
How long is these games though? Like, I just saw a walkthrough for like 4.5 hours.
The most recent games, 4 and 5, if you're really booking it, you'll probably get through in about 8 to 10 hours. My initial playthrough of Maiden of Blackwater on Switch took about 12 to 13.
Hmm. I mean, 4 to 5 hours is totally reasonable for these older games,
though. Yeah.
I mean, like, Resident Evil speed... Like, I was speedrunning it when I was doing it, and I was beating it in, like, a little over an hour, I want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Silent Hill were pretty brisk games, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, that's the fun part about games like Resident Evil. It's like, okay, now that I've gotten through it, let's figure out the optimal route to go through to where I can just get through it as quickly as possible.
I just watched a run through Resident Evil 4, except you used only explosives.
No, nice. okay, last one.
Art Academy.
All
right, this is one I got. So it's made by a group called Headstrong Games. So, but
I got things to say about Headstrong Games as soon as you're ready to tag over.
Go ahead right now before we even get into it. What do you mean? We need to talk about.
Okay, so just like one sentence about Art Academy in general. This is kind of like a take on an edutainment game on how to draw. Headstrong
Games. It's not a game. It's art. It's art training software.
Works for me. Yes. This was developed by, of course, like you said, Headstrong Games, which might not mean a whole lot to a whole lot of people. However, Headstrong Games used to go by the name Kuju London. They made...
Yeah, it just rolls right off the tongue.
They made, fellas, Battalion Wars for the GameCube.
Gasp.
Which was a spinoff of Advance Wars. And Battalion Wars 2 for the Wii. And Reign of Fire, the game, for the GameCube.
Oh, shit!
And also, we talked about House of the Dead early. They made House of the Dead Overkill for the Wii.
Oh, my God.
This is a good one, too.
Yeah. This is like a Usual Suspects moment where we discover that Headstrong Games has been everywhere in our lives.
And after House of the Dead Overkill, then they go to making this drawing tool software. But, God, what a weird left turn for this developer. Anyway.
All of it's so totally unrelated.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so this is art training software. It originally came out in 2008 on the DS and then a sequel in 2012, as well as a whole bunch of DSiWare expansions, an installment on the Wii U in 2015, and IPs also focus specifically on, I think it was Disney and Pokemon?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah, both of them got their own little Art Academy games. Guys, really good sales. This thing's probably sold about 4 to 5 million copies in its lifespan.
Total for the series?
More than the last three franchises we talked about combined. Pretty good numbers. Pretty good numbers there, eh? Yeah, actually, it's a pretty cool concept. And it's an inventive use of the hardware that it's had in all of its different forms. It actually makes sense this thing would be on the DS and then the Wii U, but only the Wii U. And not, but like, well, this thing probably wouldn't even really... The Switch is touchscreen, but you wouldn't really do that with this.
They need to, like, give you a special stylus.
Yeah, yeah. So it's actually incredibly deep software, too. It's no substitute, I guess, for, like, a Wacom pad. People are probably not going to be using it for, like, digital art that's directly. But this thing is very, very powerful for what it does. And when you see what people can do with it, it's super-duper impressive. Again, I think there's just better technology now for people that want to, like, be, you know, hand-drawn 3D, like, computer artists and stuff. But for what this thing did and for what it's capable of doing in the hands of someone that knows how to paint and how to draw, really, really, really impressive. There's actually a number of videos. One of the most fascinating videos that really sold me on this entire thing was watching people who do digital art for a living picking this up and being like, yeah, this game was cheap, you know, people were telling me about it and I thought I should check it out. And then you just watch them in a time-lapse video over the course of maybe 2 or 3 hours just make a piece of art in it, and it's really profoundly good. Again, it's in terms of it being a quote-unquote game, it's not a game. It's got some tutorial sort of stuff, but it's really no more a game than it is just a way to create art on this platform. You know, I guess... If you want to talk about, it's very weird to talk about reviews for something like this because gamers should not be reviewing this game. No one who traditionally reviews video games is fit to say if this is good. Yet they all reviewed it.
Right, you wouldn't, like, if you're reviewing Octopath Traveler, like, how does that make you qualified to review a drawing tool?
Yeah, I've heard this expression recently, and I love it, but someone was describing something as, like, dancing about architecture. Hmm. You know, it just doesn't make sense. It's two totally different medium that you can't really find the commonality. But for what it does, this does it so well. This is very, very cool. Anyone that was some sort of aspiring artist and wanted to try it out in a digital medium would love this. That said, in spite of its great sales, in spite of how it utilized the technology so well, unless Nintendo wants to go to a hardware mode where you're playing on a tablet the size of a computer screen, this is a dead franchise. Mm. I don't ever see Art Academy coming back. It's not, you can't make art with a controller. If you wanted to make art with a controller, you probably would just play like Mario Maker. Like that's the probably the more appropriate thing to mess around with if you wanted to make it art. I think in terms of like literally just making pixel graphics, there's really not much this can do.
But, I think they could probably like do something like a drawing tool with the touch screen of the Switch, like we were saying, if you had like the correct stylus. And we'll see if like future iterations of hardware keep that touchscreen or the sort of handheld home console hybrid. So who knows? Like, will they make another one? I kind of think they should, mm-hmm. but I don't know that it's likely that they do. This very well could be a dead franchise.
And part of the interesting thing is if you watch people use it, there's a zoom in slider.
Mm.
So you can zoom out, make big lines, and then zoom in if you want to do more detailed work. So, I mean, to that extent, yeah, I guess a Switch could work. It just doesn't exactly feel right compared to what I know of having a 3DS and a DS XL, having a Wii U, having these to play it on. Those would, I feel like, be much more suited for the Switch. It's almost like the Switch doesn't even acknowledge the fact that it's a touch tablet, you know?
Like, yeah, it's true. Like, it's kind of an afterthought that it even has that touch screen. But, you know, if playing the mind experiment game here, if you were to remove the Joy-Con, turn it vertically, you could probably hold it pretty well while you are.
That's a fair point. Totally could, actually, yeah. So I don't know. I really am impressed by this, and again, really, really good sales. This is just another one of those sneaky.
What'd you say? Like
DS titles that sells like 4 million copies. Of course,
like,
it did.
Like 4 to 5 million as a series in total.
Yeah.
So yeah, about 4 to 5 entries of that series in total. Yeah, you're looking at about at least a million each on average.
Did okay.
Yeah.
Did okay.
Not shabby at all.
Overall, let's tell you the overall off the top of the head. I'd be giving it a C, just a flat C. I feel like this is a mid C game. Did pretty good. C in longevity, B in sales, A in reception, and a F in iconography. There's just nothing about. There is a.
But like, I could like totally picture if they did a Switch version of this that's just another Pokemon drawing game. I could see it doing gangbusters.
Oh, I think that was my other point that I wanted to make is that this is again one of those. Like, this is already in the mobile space. This is another one of those franchises that they could have made a mobile game out of for iOS.
Sure, Android. And like it had on an iPad.
There's already tons and tons of different like phone color games that people love to play because it's just very a soothing sort of thing to do. So yeah, I mean,
I think they did have a Pokemon version.
They did. Well, but to bring that back, like, but yeah, they had a Pokemon and a Disney version.
Yeah,
yeah. The Pokemon one was on. They were both on 3DS actually.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Art Academy. Nintendo presents Art Academy iOS app. You know.
Yeah.
I could see that actually gaining some traction, but yeah. Overall, I think it's a cool footnote, but it's a very difficult one to put on the ranking. But hey, you know, you sell 5 million copies, like, come on, that ain't nothing.
I'm totally comfortable with a C at this point. This is probably one, unless they start doing some new installments, like over the next several years, we'll probably see a drop in that tier rankings just because like you gotta make new software to stay up there. But yeah, I think this is like it's. Surprising to me that they have not done another one of these yet.
Yeah.
And maybe, like you were saying, it is because of the limitations of the hardware. But yeah, so, you know what we didn't do? We didn't go through our general tier rankings to kick things off. So I'm going to open that page up really quick so that we can give the brief rundown. So what we just did is we put Bayonetta in the C tier. and we put Art Academy in the C tier. Yes.
It's funny to think of them on the same level, but yes,
we kind totally appropriate. Putting Art Academy in there as well, and then we put Trace Memory obviously in the F tier.
Yep.
And what?
No, it was
Fatal Frame. We put in the D tier.
Another code.
But above Legend of Starfy.
I'm totally fine with that. I mean, even above Chibi Robo.
Oh, certainly above Chibi Robo.
All right, so just to do it, let's go from the bottom up this time. So in the F tier, in no particular order for this particular read off, we got games like in the F tier, Pushmo, Starfy, Chibi Robo, Another Code.
I those are all my picks, mind you.
I mean, there's.
I'm going random. You're clearly like cherry picking ones that you think would be fun to talk about, and then I get stuck with the dregs.
And I also try to pick ones that are like timing appropriate because we're getting a new Bayonetta installment and Fatal Frame. In the D tier, we've got Arms, Star Fox, and Fatal Frame. In the C tier, Punch Out, the Advance Wars series, Pikmin, Art Academy, Bayonetta, Earthbound, and Brain Age. Up in the B tier, Dr. Mario, Xenoblade, Paper Mario, Luigi's Mansion, and Fire Emblem. In the A tier, Splatoon, Mario, and Kirby. And then in the S tier, Donkey Kong, Smash, Pokemon, Mario Platformers, Mario Kart, and Zelda.
What's our A tier? Is it Dr. Mario is the A tier?
A tier is Kirby, Metroid, Splatoon.
Okay.
That's all in the A tier for now, but we'll probably get a couple more in there before we're done, because we got...
Well, keep in mind that S tier is probably not going to expand any bigger... I feel like we one already penciled in like five to be like, okay, we're not even going to bother talking about fucking Pokemon. Yeah, it's an S-tier.
Right, yeah, we locked in right at the beginning Zelda, Mario Kart, the Mario platformers, Pokemon, and Smash. Those were, these are, we don't even need to discuss.
So this is good. I feel like, yeah, most stuff's landing in the B's and C's, and we're filling out the D and the F a little bit.
Yeah, it's coming along. I could see like a couple other franchises at least contending for the S tier, maybe ending up in the A tier, something like Animal Crossing. Animal Crossing is...
Oh, that's S tier. I'm just going to go ahead and fucking tell you it's an S tier.
Really, really, especially most recently, this franchise rocketed up really high. And we'll probably have a frank exchange of ideas about something like Mario Party. We'll see where that one ends up. Maybe Yoshi, but I don't know how high Yoshi's going to get. We'll see.
We're actually at about the halfway point, too, of all of the different franchises we have listed here.
Yeah, and if there's anything else like you feel strongly about wanting to add in here, we can talk about anything.
Nintendogs, S tier, Nintendogs.
I really like, in Nintendogs, like if that's one where if they would make a new game, I think we would have a very serious conversation about A tier or S tier. But it has been so long since they made one of those. And it's so weird. It sells gangbusters every time.
We'll talk about it.
Why aren't you making Nintendogs? What are you doing? Like that's another one.
Make it happen.
All right, and that's another one. Prime for just mobile installment. Like if you really want to continue making mobile games, I'm not so sure they do. Like stuff like Brain Age.
You should let me lead the mobile division. I come in here every time we do one of these things, and I'm like, this is a dead series. But why not just bring it back on the fucking iOS app? Why not Android? Android would love this shit.
And if they just did Dr. Mario the right way,
yeah,
games like Style Savvy. Like Style Savvy is going to be an interesting one to talk about. Anyway. We digress. Next up is going to be the retro show. I'm pumped. Wes, are you pumped?
Sure.
It's going to be such a good show, you guys. It's going to be so good.
You say that every time. What's going to make this one so good?
We got a ton of games to talk about.
Here's the thing. Yeah, like, we might as well make March, and April, because there's so much stuff in March and April, there's like nothing.
Oh, really? Is that true?
I looked ahead because I was like, oh my God, this is insane. And in April, it's bad. April's bad.
It's kind of might be like our first sub 2-hour retro show in a while.
There's like no games that come out of note, and yeah, like I think what is it? Van Wilder is probably the biggest movie to talk about.
Oh no,
it's bad.
Oh no,
what movie we get this month?
This month, fucking March is just absolutely bonkers.
List them off.
No, I'll bring it up here real quick.
We should be doing like a game of the month, movie of the month, and album of the month as well. That should be like a recurring thing because obviously, like February was Reign of Fire. Movie of the month.
Oh, yeah.
No question.
I already watched a bunch of these movies, and I didn't watch all of these, but 40 Days, 40 Nights, not great. We Were Soldiers, Time Machine, The First Ice Age, Resident Evil, Itumamatambien, Blade 2, Death to Smoochie, Panic Room, and The Rookie.
Yeah. Mm. So I watched a bunch of those as well.
Yeah, I've watched probably about six of these. Like, just great. Not always great, but interesting stuff to talk about. And then games. Yeah, like fucking Fatal Frame, Mr. Mosquito, Virtua Fighter 4, Star Wars Jedi, Starfighter, Hooters Road Trip. The Deus Ex port to the PS2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Star Wars Jedi Knight 2, Jedi Outcast, Dungeon Siege, Freedom Force, 007 Agent of Fire, Sega Soccer Slam. And I'm sure, and that's not even... there's probably a bunch of... GBA games as well, I didn't even mention.
Now there's a handful of GBA games worth talking about.
I got like four or five different events to talk about, you know. A light month for music though. So I won't
really
tell you guys too much with that.
We're gonna talk about some music.
Yeah, there's definitely some interesting albums.
Just in my notes here that I've listened to so far, we got Flogging Molly, Against Me, Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah.
I got five or six other albums queued up to talk about.
Yeah, that Hate Breed record.
It's a Simple Plan. Oh, we're going to get to drag some stuff through the mud. It's going to be so fun.
Yep. And don't sleep on this Finch record either.
That one's like, Finch, I got really, really queued up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So yeah, lots of content here. Oh my gosh.
And then we'll wrap it all up at the end of the month at the official show. That's it. That's the end.
So long.
So long. Thank you.